This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. New evidence has emerged of Myanmar forces having launched a massive scorched earth campaign against the Rohingya minority in Rakhine State since August 25th, leading to one of the worst refugee crises in recent history. Amnesty International has analyzed data from satellite imagery and, in conjunction with eyewitness reports, concluded that a systematic campaign of ethnic cleansing has been taking place against the Rohingya in Myanmar. Further, as Rohingya families have fled to neighboring Bangladesh, Myanmar forces have been found to be deliberately installing landmines along their escape routes. My guest is Tirana Hassan. She is the Crisis Response Director at Amnesty International. Welcome to the program, Tirana.
Thanks for having me.
So this has been going on since August 25, so well over, just about a month actually, so not very long. And during this about 3.5 week period, I understand that 370,000 people, so more than a quarter of a million people, have fled. Can you explain what it is, and I mentioned a few things, but what it is exactly that's causing the Rohingya to flee their homes?
Sure. Well, you know, 370,000 refugees was actually the number of refugees last week on Friday. That number has gone up to over 400,000, which have fled just since August 25th. And what happened on August 25th was a small Rohingya insurgency attacked a few police, a number of police posts, which killed about 12 security personnel. In response to that, the government of Myanmar has responded with a, you know, targeted, deliberate, and planned campaign, which is they have tried to write off as a counterinsurgency operation. But what we know, it has been widespread and systematic and has targeted the Rohingya community. You know, any sort of assertion that this is a counterinsurgency operation really doesn't stand up to scrutiny anymore, as we see the security forces going in village upon village throughout northern Rakhine State and opening fire indiscriminately on the Rohingya villagers who live there. We have seen men, women, and children all being targeted. We have heard accounts, and we have seen imagery through satellite imagery analysis, as well as looking at active fire data, which shows that there has been large-scale burning, which has targeted Rohingya villages. It is a response essentially to this very brutal campaign, which we believe rises to the level of ethnic cleansing, which has driven people across the border into Bangladesh.
When we use the term scorched earth, sometimes it's a metaphorical term. In this case, it's a literal term. They are literally scorching the homes of these villages, of these villagers who are then fleeing them. Explain how you came to that conclusion, all the pieces of evidence, because of course there are many attempts by Myanmar authorities to deny that this is happening.
Sure. I mean, it is a scorched earth policy, and you know, it's very obvious, because what you see when you look at the satellite imagery, which is one of the tools that we've used satellite imagery. We've used, as I said, this active fire data, which actually can show active burning. But, you know,
and what does that mean? What is active fire data? I mean, it's basically from the satellite, you can tell where there are fires.
Right. Yes, from the sky, from space, basically, you can tell where there's active burning. And this wasn't just on the 25th. It was on the 25th. It was on the 26th. It was on the 27th. You know, it was well into September. That this continued to go on. And we're even, you know, so we have that data, and that is hard evidence. And I should point out that you know, even it is the monsoon season right now in this part of the world. And that means that we sometimes the cloud cover is actually so thick that you can't actually get an accurate read of the extent of the fires. It can be hidden by the clouds, as can the villages. If we look at looking for burnt villages, that they can be, if there's clouds, they'll be hidden. But even through the cracks in the clouds, we are seeing widespread burning. And I can give you an example of how we understand how targeted this is. I mean, for starters, we've spoken to, you know, Rohingya refugees who are in Bangladesh who have told us exactly who went into their villages. So it was the security forces with armed vigilante groups who went in and started, you know, shooting randomly and then lighting their houses on fire. But the satellite imagery is very telling and actually points to how targeted and how deliberate this campaign has been, because there is a particular, there are villages and neighborhoods which are Rohingya, which are surrounded by other ethnic groups, Rakhine, which is the other main ethnic group in Rakhine State, as well as other minorities. When you look at certain villages or towns, you'll actually see that only the Rohingya neighborhoods in the towns have been burnt. And in one particular village known as Indin, it's the shape of a banana, for lack of a better description. The east of it is a Rohingya, is Rohingya populated. So it's the Rohingya village. The other side is actually a mixed Rakhine and other ethnicities. And the burning that we saw, we could actually see the scorched, you know, remains from the sky, from the satellite imagery. It literally stops. It is delineated at the point where the Rohingya village ends. And that is, we've seen this in location after location.
So you have all of this data that shows that it is consistent with the targeting of specifically where this minority lives. And you have confirmed with eyewitness reports of people who have survived this, what is happening. The monsoons are happening, as you mentioned. These are not natural fires. And even if they were, how could they just be in areas where there are Rohingya? So unless the Rohingya are setting fire to the villages themselves that they're escaping from, the only other perpetrators of these fires are Myanmar forces or, as you said, these armed vigilante groups in Myanmar.
Well, you raise a very important point because, yes, indeed, it is the monsoon season and it's the end of the monsoon season. So everything is green and lush. But on top of that, there have been quite heavy rains. So to actually be able to start a fire in these conditions is quite difficult. So it is impossible to be able to write these off as wildfires by any means or a fire that might have spread. We have seen video and photo evidence which shows security forces working in concert with these vigilante groups, literally pouring fuel onto houses. And while we were on the border in Bangladesh, we could see in one particular province, the coast looks out over a particular area known as Mongdor. And the fires are they're going on now. They're going on today. Our Amnesty International researcher on the ground saw three fires burning. Over the weekend, there were five fires burning. And they're so intense that you actually see the orange glow all the way from Bangladesh.
Wow.
So the plumes of smoke continue to rise. But you raised another important point, because the government narrative is that, you know, these were the Rohingya who were actually setting alight to their own villages to make it look like it's the security forces. Unfortunately, that just does not stack up. We have seen photographs and video, which we have been able to extract the metadata from, which means that we can show where that photograph was taken. We see the geolocation of it. We can tell the time of it. These are not doctored videos and photographs, and they actually show wide-scale burning. And as a matter of fact, the BBC, or the government as a whole, took some journalists up to Northern Rakhine State, and the BBC actually showed footage where they saw new fires being lit, and there were these vigilante groups walking away who said that they had actually set fire to them. But it is planned, it is deliberate, and you know, it's to drive the Rohingya out of their homes.
Right, it seems to very clearly be a campaign to push the Rohingya into Bangladesh or frankly anywhere else that will take them. And of course, while they are leaving, while they're fleeing mostly on foot and also partly by boat, they are facing multiple crises, multiple dangers, right? Let's talk about the landmines that we've been hearing about, that Amnesty also reported on, that have been found to be laid along the routes that Rohingya refugees are taking. How many landmines? How serious is it? How many people has it impacted? And do we know for certain that these are the work of the Myanmar forces?
So Amnesty International investigated the landmines issue after we received reports that and two landmines had gone off in a period of just a few days. So we actually went to the location of one of the blast sites, and we spoke to eyewitnesses, we spoke to family members, we've analysed, we've seen some very graphic photographs of the injuries of this, in this instance, a woman who stepped on the mine, and the forensic analysis points to the fact that the injuries are consistent with a landmine. But most importantly is that these, you know, what makes this so callous is not only are landmines completely indiscriminate, you know, they're not designed to kill, they're designed to maim, and they have been laid right across the border fence in between Myanmar and Bangladesh. And this is the route that, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of people have used to cross. And even before this exodus, this was a pathway that people used to use. These are communities who are intrinsically linked. And so people have crossed in and out. And we've not heard of any documented cases of landmines going off in this particular stretch. And we have heard consistent reports from villagers and eyewitnesses, both Bangladeshi and Rohingya, who say that they have seen the Myanmar armed forces walking in single file, for people that have probably worked in areas that have been mined or have, you know, aware of how security forces operate in mined areas. They were always walking in single file. And the eyewitnesses have seen the Myanmar soldiers digging in the ground. We have since gotten hold of photographic evidence which shows landmines that were in the ground, and also photographs of the remnants of those mines after they were exploded. And our weapons expert at Amnesty International has analysed these, and we believe that this is a particular landmine known as a PMN-1, which is a Russian-designed, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Russia sold it to Myanmar. But it does, Myanmar actually has the capacity to make these, and they have been used by the Myanmar armed forces in other conflicts in the north of Myanmar. So, you know, all evidence points to the fact that the Myanmar armed forces, in a very callous move, have been laying these landmines very recently, because the number of incidents are, there have been more since we did our investigation. We know of at least two people who have died because of their injuries, including a 15-year-old boy, but a number of other people, including some Bangladeshi farmers who were walking with their cattle in the area, who have been maimed.
So it's not enough that the Rohingya are being pushed out of their villages as they're trying to flee. They are facing violence from Myanmar. It's quite amazing. Also, because of the monsoons, there is a lot of mud that people are traversing. We're seeing images of the elderly having to be carried, and of course, children having to be carried through this very thick mud. Can you describe a little bit about the terrible journey that these hundreds of thousands, now you said more than 400,000 people, have had to take to flee for their lives?
Yeah, it's a very brutal journey. People that we interviewed, when they were literally arriving just within minutes of crossing the border into Bangladesh, are exhausted. Many of them haven't eaten in days. What happens is, if I can just go back a step, is that in many instances, the security forces surround the village and then they just start shooting indiscriminately. And so in certain instances, people just run for their lives, so they don't even take anything. In other instances, we have heard, and this also points to how planned this is, that they have been warned that they need to leave in half an hour or the next day. So people pack up whatever belongings they can. In other instances, you know, they hide in the jungle nearby or in a forest. They watch their villages burn. And once the security forces and the vigilantes have gone, they may, if they're brave enough, go in and be able to collect a few belongings if they can, or look for loved ones that they're separated from, or look for the dead. And, you know, they're fleeing under those circumstances. So some people are coming with nothing, literally just the clothes on their back. Others are arriving with everything that they have in the world. And they start, it depends on where they're coming from, but many of them have actually been having to cross a mountain range. And that journey can take up to, you know, 10 days, depending on how able-bodied you are and how far your village is, just to be able to get to the River Naf, which separates Myanmar and Bangladesh. And then you need to be able to either walk across if you can, or have enough money to be able to pay a boat person to be able to take you across. So it's incredibly hilly, it's jungle, it's a difficult journey. And, you know, one of the most horrific things that we actually heard, besides the sheer brutality of some of these attacks, is that, you know, this mountain range is actually littered with the dead, because it is a difficult journey, that people do not have food. And if you're injured, or you're sick, or you're the elderly, or you're just in a fragile state, which a lot of the Rohingya are, because they have been living with very limited access to health and foods anyway. But a lot of people are just dying on the journey. And a lot of people actually arrive, because the shooting is so indiscriminate, that they actually have bullets lodged in them, or they have bullet wounds. And so, you know, you can imagine what it is like to walk through the mud and to try and traverse a mountain over, you know, a period of 6 or 10 days. The people are really quite desperate.
Tirana, what awaits them in Bangladesh? For years, the Rohingya have been persecuted. This is a seeming culmination of many years of repression and persecution. So Bangladesh has not, it does have experience, I should say, with receiving Rohingya refugees. In the past, it hasn't been a welcoming state. Is it more welcoming now?
You're very right in that the Bangladesh has received Rohingya refugees in the 70s and the 90s, but never at a scale like this. And even though the Bangladeshi government has actually continued to maintain its position that the borders are closed, they have allowed 400,000 plus refugees into Bangladesh. And
which is already a very poor country on its own, of course, we should add.
Absolutely. And they are arriving in this particular area around Cox's Bazar district. And the government has let them in. And I was there over the last 10 days. I just got back over the weekend. And it's every day it looked different. The sheer volume of people was extraordinary and shocking. And you know, I've worked in humanitarian aid in large-scale refugee movements before, but this really was a shock even to me. And the situation, of course, was the humanitarian situation then becomes very desperate. I mean, which country in the world can just absorb 400,000 people in an already poor area? And so people were essentially coming in, and they were just sitting on the side of the road, or they were looking for family who were already there. And there was, UNICEF has actually said that 60% of this population movement is women and children. And you could see the women who were alone, and whilst some people who are in a better position would buy some bamboo or receive some from a donation, and they would erect with plastic sheeting a shelter, the women, often with their children, would just sit right on the side of the road waiting for somebody to hand something out, and they would just drape the plastic sheeting over them. There are humanitarian actors in the area, but when you have 400,000 people, the handful of humanitarian actors who were there were stretched to capacity within days. There is now a larger humanitarian response underway, but it has taken time, simply logistically, to get the amount of shelter materials, medicines, food to this part of Bangladesh. So it has been a desperate situation, and it's been degenerating on a daily basis.
Tirana, let's talk about what Amnesty International is calling for. This is, of course, a very important part of our conversation now. Your organization has used the term ethnic cleansing, a very heavy, very serious term, maybe one shade short of genocide, or a few shades short of genocide. What are you calling on the international community to do?
Well, for starters, I think there's been a lot of, ethnic cleansing is not a term that Amnesty International or any other organization, including, other human rights organizations, but as well as the High Commissioner for Human Rights from the UN, has used this term, ethnic cleansing. And that is because the evidence is very clear. These were planned and targeted attacks which have been targeting the Rohingya population based on their ethnicity and their religion.
And let's just mention this really clearly. This is a Muslim minority. I don't know. I sort of take it for granted, but in case people didn't realize, the Rohingya are Muslim.
They are Muslim, and it would be incorrect to so call this a Buddhist-Muslim conflict. It's not that. This is actually, the Rohingya have been targeted. They've been denied citizenship for decades now in the country, and they've been a persecuted group. But this campaign in particular has really focused on driving them out. There have been killings of many Rohingya. There have been men just disappeared or taken away. They've been seen to be taken away by the security forces and not heard of again. And this Amnesty International believes rises to the level of a crimes against humanity. This is really at a scale that has not been seen, because there have been conflicts in Rakhine State in the past. So, when we talk about what needs to happen, I think we need to focus first and all about stopping the killings and stopping the push factor of what's forcing people over the border. And that is this massive burning of villages, of Rohingya villages, and the targeting of them by the security forces. So what Amnesty International is calling for first and foremost is for an immediate end to the violent campaign. This is not a counterinsurgency operation. The government itself, the security forces itself, have called it a clearance operation. But it's clearance. Not a clearance. Wow. Indeed, that's their words. And that's not a clearance of a group of insurgents. This is, targeting all Rohingya, the men, the women, the elderly. There have been children who have been killed and maimed. So, this is definitely a completely the firing and the attacks are completely indiscriminate. They are not going in looking for insurgents. It is much wider than that. So immediately the security forces should be reeling in their forces and stopping the killings. I think that there are plenty of international actors at the moment, states who support the Myanmar military in terms of giving them training and support.
And let's name them. Who are the ones that are supporting the Myanmar military?
Well, there's been the EU and the US have had longstanding support in terms of training and capacity building to the Myanmar armed forces. Not so long ago, the president of India has met with the Myanmar government and members of the armed forces. So you have a number of states which are involved, even states like Australia, who provide peacekeeping training to the security forces. But anybody who is now engaging with the security forces, any responsible state, should now be really taking a step back and talking about and reassessing, whether or not they really want to be engaging and providing support to a military or and police force which is undertaking a campaign of ethnic cleansing and using landmines. So that is the first thing that states could do. But also, there needs to be condemnation. We have heard a lot of criticism of Aung San Suu Kyi and very little of the security forces. And
that's a really good point.
Yeah, Aung San Suu Kyi, you know, she has a Nobel Peace Prize. We all know her name. And she has a really important role to play here. And it has been negligent in her silence. She has an important role to play to de-escalate the violence and also to condemn the actions of the security forces, which she has not done yet. But also, you know, beyond stopping the killings and the burnings and ensuring that there is accountability for those who are perpetrating these crimes, there also needs to be a focus on addressing the long-standing causes to this conflict. This is decades of discrimination. This is a result also of a citizenship law which denies essentially the Rohingya population citizenship and their fundamental rights that go along with that. So they are not classified as citizens of Myanmar, and you hear the government referring them not as Rohingyas, as Bengalis. And this is deeply problematic, and it's fueled a very dangerous xenophobic rhetoric inside the country. And it is up to the government, a responsible head of state, and Aung San Suu Kyi is in her role as state councillor, to de-escalate that, because this is a climate now which is really quite toxic and very dangerous.
Well, Thirana, give out a website. I know that Amnesty International also has petitions online that people can sign. Where can they do that?
Yes, we would encourage people to be able to sign the petitions calling for action from the Myanmar government to stop the abuses. And you can do that at www.amnesty.org. We have a take action button. If you take a look at any of our work on the Rohingya in the corner, you'll find a take action button, and that will take you to the petition. And we would encourage everybody to sign that. The more voices we have, putting pressure on the Myanmar government, the better. And I think that there are other roles to play that people can contact, you know, their local politicians and actually ask questions about what is our government doing about stopping the violence against the Rohingya.
And we'll post a link to amnesty.org from our website later today. Thirana, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest is Thirana Hassan. She's the Crisis Response Director at Amnesty International. And we've been discussing new evidence of a deliberate campaign of ethnic cleansing against Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.